Good evening, and welcome to Medium in Our Midst here on BBS Radio. I'm your host, Daria Justin, and you will find me here every Wednesday where I'll be discussing the nature of energy, spirituality, and the endless journey of the soul in the afterlife and the here and now. I'll be bringing you different topics, interesting guests, some here and some from the other side, so please relax, listen, enjoy, and expect the unexpected. Thank you so much for joining me here on BBS Radio, the number one radio station on the Internet. Today is Wednesday, August 11th, and whether you are joining me for the first time or you are a loyal listener, I so appreciate being able to share this time with you. Please visit my website. It's DariaJustin.com, and there you will find events and upcoming guests, read my inspirational blog, or get information about my readings. If you'd like to be kept current, find me on Facebook, sign up for my weekly newsletter, and you can email me at souls, S-A-U-L-S, at DariaJustin.com. I just want to give out the numbers here for the show tonight. There is a toll-free number you can call in on, and that is 888-815-9756. There are three additional lines, and they are 530-327-7602. 530-776-5185 and 530-413-4522. My heart's desire here on Medium in Our Midst is to offer you intuitive guidance from an eclectic, energetic mix of spiritual master teachers and loved ones, and to bring on guests who will help illuminate your expedition through life. And to all of them, I am eternally grateful. Speaking of illumination, that would be a fair way to describe my guest tonight, Mr. Kevin Ryerson. The universe is a magical place, always putting people in our path at exactly the right moment, and I am so happy to have found Kevin again. I say again because I was first introduced to him when I read Shirley MacLaine's books and saw her movie Out on a Limb, and I was astonished by his gift. So I want to tell you a little bit about Kevin before I introduce him. Kevin Ryerson is an award-winning expert intuitive. He is the author of the landmark book, Spirit Communication, The Soul's Path. His latest book, The Future Healer, Spirit Communication on Healing, was co-authored with Ron Henry. He's featured in Shirley MacLaine's bestsellers, Out on a Limb, Dancing in the Light, It's All in the Playing, and Saging While Aging. His research is featured in the books Flower Essences, Spiritual Nutrition, Dr. Gabriel Cousins, and most recently in Dr. Walter Semkiv's books, Return of the Revolutionaries, The Case for Reincarnation and Soul Groups Reunited, Born Again, and Dr. William Kotze's Scientific Use of Intuition in Opening the Inner Eye. In 1987, Kevin introduced transformational travel, journeys that connect you with the spirit of the place and often change you for the better with inspiration from this life in the past. And past lives. I don't know about you, but that sounds absolutely wonderful to me. Kevin leads groups in Bali, Egypt, England, Greece, Ireland, Japan, Peru, Arizona, and Hawaii. Quite a world traveler. Kevin served as a director of the Intuition Network and is the former vice president of the California Society for Psychical Study. He is co-founder of the Institute for the Integration of Science, Intuition, and Spirit. He's a founding director of the Tree of Life Rejuvenation Center. His credits include creative consultant on the television miniseries Out on a Limb, which I saw, the movie Poltergeist 2, and the movies The Magic Boat and Palooka. His media experiences include Oprah Winfrey, Good Morning America, CNN, Yoga Journal, Newsweek, Kindred Spirit, and other national and international forums. Kevin is well known and respected for his balanced and integrated world views. He provides experiences that touch and change people's lives. His life work is dedicated to bridging the gap between science and spirituality, and he maintains a consulting practice in Seattle, Washington. Before I bring him on, I just want to give you his website. And that is www.kevinryerson.com. You can also find that information on the show page here for Medium in Our Midst. So with that, I would like to say good evening, Kevin, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me on the program today.
Well, that was quite an introduction, but, you know, you are quite an amazing person. You have accomplished so much. I know you've been doing this since you're a teenager.
Yes, I've been interested in psychic phenomena as long as I can remember, and I always introduce myself to any audience I speak to as, hello, my name's Kevin Ryerson, I'm your friendly neighborhood psychic and trance channel here in the Global Village. Yes, the interest goes back quite a way, and part of it is because spirituality, spiritualism, the phenomena of channeling is actually very much part and parcel, a natural part of our history here in the U.S. I was born and raised in Sandusky, Ohio, and not too far away, just about an hour outside of Buffalo, New York, is the world's largest spiritualist camp. It's been there for about 130 years.
Lilydale?
Yes, it's called Lilydale. And it's very unusual because it's a formally incorporated community, and there are 200 mediums and or channels who live there year-round.
And I'm ashamed to say I haven't been there yet.
Oh, it's really quite a fascinating place. My joke is that it's a combination of Mayberry RFD meets Ghost. I think the point of the matter is that when you take a look at Edgar Cayce, who... magazines such as, say, many of the major science journals, the Journal of American Medicine, acknowledge that Edgar Cayce, America's best-known channel and psychic, is considered to be the founder of the modern holistic healthcare movement.
Mm-hmm.
His use of the psychic to diagnose medical conditions at a distance is very well documented, but actually it was the preservation and the founding basis of holistic medicine in the West that he is actually best noted for.
So those few people who may not know about Edgar Cayce, he had almost no education, and he was giving readings with giving medical information and other information that he couldn't possibly have known.
Yeah, he had a 6th grade 19th century education, and yet in altered states or in the trance state, he was able to speak on a university level addressing issues of medicine that many physicians just now, that his view of the body as an energy system and how the endocrine system contributed to the states of well-being that we're just now beginning to look at was far, far ahead of their time.
Mm-hmm.
When he was channeling in the early and in the mid-20th century.
And when did you find Edgar Cayce? Like, where in your journey did you find him?
I would say that I came across Edgar Cayce sometime around the fifth or sixth grade.
Oh, wow. So you were really young. See, I'm telling everyone you're young. You have accomplished so much, but you're still young.
Well, actually, I was born in 1951, so you can do the math, and I'm 59 plus now. But in a way, supposedly, 59 and 60 is the new 40, as they say. So
I'm good with that. I'm 58, so I'm
go.
Okay with that.
There you go. Spirit through me once channeled that part of the new challenge of our society is the new longevity. There are more people who have lived to be 100 years old in this particular time period than in any other period of time. And their joke is that you're if we're going to live to be 100 and or more, as Deepak Chopra pointed out, if you were to use nutrition alone to eliminate most of the illnesses that take people's lives prematurely, which are usually heart conditions, and or preventable forms of cancer, which all are nutritionally based, the statistics say that people should easily live to be about 120 years of age.
Yes. Yeah,
and,
I've read that too.
In my own channelings, one of the ancestral intelligences that speak through me by the name of Tom McPherson said, well, if you're going to live to be 100, he said, you're not entitled to a midlife crisis until you're about 90. So
he's quite a character. So why don't you describe for our audience channeling for you,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
and the question that we talked about yesterday when we spoke was, I asked you if you were aware of yourself when you channel.
Mm-hmm. Well, channeling itself has a long history in the United States and around various other places in the world. For instance, Abraham Lincoln had mediums in the White House. Emanuel Swedenborg, who was a major scientist and engineer in Sweden, used to conduct channelings for all the various crown heads of Europe. So channeling has a very practical and pragmatic history to it. And as to what it is, it's really the use of altered states of consciousness from which people are usually familiar with in the form of, say, hypnosis or meditation, to set aside one level of consciousness, usually the analytical critical faculties of the brain, and to allow intuitive resources or psychic resources to speak through, usually on a broader range of subject materials than we may know consciously. In mediumship, it's the idea that a loved one who we may be close to, or someone who we knew in other lifetimes, acts to us as a guide and teacher. And because they can access a wider range of knowledge that has been referred to in other cultures as the Akashic Record, in the West it's sometimes referred to by such people as Jung as the collective unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And by tapping into this collective unconscious, we are able to then address ideas, questions, resources, and sometimes even see future events before they transpire. So channeling essentially is a source of ingeniousness that virtually every person is able to access.
Do you think that the collective conscious would you say that was the superconscious?
I would say that within the model of psychology worked with Jung, that it was the superconscious is what many mystics refer to as the higher self. It's the idea that there is a conscious, subconscious, and then a superconscious state of mind. The conscious mind, of course, is the consciousness that we hold in everyday life, and it's the events that shape us from childhood to adulthood. The subconscious is what lies just below the area of knowledge, information, and the memories we have that make up our fundamental conscious identity. And then the superconscious is overall the arc of the sum total of consciousness that we have the potential to be. In some metaphysics, in both the East and the West, the superconscious is made up collectively of all the past lives that we may have lived, bringing in the principle of reincarnation and the evolution of consciousness, and all the future potential that we may hold for ourselves based within the context of how we learn from what is called our karma or our dharma. Karma is simply the law of return, that is, as we think and those events return to us, we learn, we grow, and we prosper from those.
I remember something you said in one of your books was we remember the future,
mm-hmm.
which I think that was just that. I love that.
Well,
I just absolutely love that.
That would go into our potential, into our future potential, or what we call our future self, which is all part of the dimension that we call the superconscious or the higher self. The way it has been put in perspective is that if we lose a set of car keys, we go back through an inventory of the day until we recall the moment where we had last placed the car keys. So we call that to mind. Furthermore, if something is troubling us in our response to, say, maybe authority figures or circumstances in life, we go back through our lives and maybe we find an event somewhere, say, in childhood or even early adulthood, or something that we are not calling to consciousness, so therefore it lies in the subconscious, and so therefore it becomes a source of anxiousness and maybe even not fully realized behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So when we go back and we call that to mind, when we call that to consciousness, the bottom line is that we can begin to essentially alter and develop that behavior. Ultimately, what transpires is that we begin to then, in turn, recall other elements that we feel as though that we have been places before, which is called deja vu.
Uh-huh.
That maybe begin to be the roots and the recall of past lives. As we become conscious of those dimensions of ourselves, of past lives, Spirit has then said, the same process by which you remember an object that you have lost and then recall to reclaim the object, it is that same process of memory by which you may recall or remember other lives. And furthermore, if events from childhood can shape the adult personality, and if then past lives can shape entire lifetimes, you are then, if you will, by the issue of the same process of recalling past lives, you are able to remember the future.
Mm-hmm. And what I think is absolutely fundamental to what's happening now is that people are starting to really open themselves up to these concepts and believe that they can do this.
Well, they can do this if they want. Yes, I think you're quite correct about that. And the reason that there's more of that is because this is a natural phenomenon. I point out that the same way people have certain reflexes and they can train themselves to be athletes and, you know, go on and to play baseball and in the majors, everyone has psychic reflexes. As an example, although meditation and altered state sounds very exotic, everyone daydreams.
I wrote a book about it.
Perfect, because daydreaming is people's natural ability to, in the course of everyday life, you know, to access the subconscious and the superconscious resources. And anyone who has daydreamed has used a meditative reflex to tap into that resource. Now, then through things like meditation and the practice of meditation, they can take that reflex, and then just as it's been described many times, it's like a muscle you exercise, you can begin to develop that and use that resource and tap into your deeper creativity. So
it's really important for people to understand, and I tell my clients this all the time, that it's important to practice meditation. It's funny, yesterday when we were speaking, I asked you if when you meditated, if you fell into a trance state, and you laughed.
as I do again. Meditation itself is the conscious exercise of our deeper dimensions, is what it boils down to. The other thing is that people need to be aware that in Buddhism, there's what's called the Noble Eightfold Path. And one of the dimensions of that path is called right meditation. Now, people are unique. Each person is an individual. And everyone associates meditation maybe necessarily with sitting in some kind of sedentary position and then forcing themselves into absolute stillness. That is just one expression of meditation. Some people are auditory. So therefore, the use of mantras or listening might be a more appropriate form of meditation for them. Other people are more sense dominant, that is, they're more kinetic, so they have a sense of touch. So therefore, working with something like rosaries that are tactile,
mm-hmm.
can help them put them into these altered states of consciousness that, again, are very similar to or identical with, say, the daydreaming episode, which is a reflex. So they already have some prior experience. They just need to isolate what is considered to be right meditation for them as an individual.
Right, to find out for them. Because you're right. Everybody thinks, oh, I can't meditate because I can't get thoughts out of my head.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a very visual person. So the keys that I give them are to imagine yourself in the most beautiful place you can think of and just focus on that imagery. And then eventually you find yourself just gone one day.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's them finding their way of what works for them.
Exactly.
So tell us about the ancestors. This is so exciting for me. Tell us about the ancestors that come through. I know I've read about them, but that come through when you're channeling.
Well, in the book Spirit Communication, The Soul's Path, one of the issues I address is that we do have what are called spirit guides and teachers. And spirit guides and teachers are persons or souls that we have known in other lifetimes. They are people who were there at the time that we incurred what we call karma, which is the purpose for returning or for incarnating so that we can grow from the knowledge of events in our from our past lives. Spirit guides and teachers are what I refer to as ancestral intelligence. Many people associate mediumship or channeling perhaps with communication with loved ones who's immediately passed to the other side. And in many cultures, such as the Yoruba culture and in Japan and in China, in many mediumistic cultures, such as Bali is a mediumistic culture, staying in touch with loved ones is for the purpose so they can incarnate back into our family. And between lifetimes, those loved ones may act as guides and teachers to us so that they can be better prepared for their eventual incarnation. But we also have what I call ancestral intelligences, who people who may not be immediately part of our loved ones or our blood relatives, mm-hmm. but they are personalities who we knew in other lifetimes. For instance, Shirley MacLaine, when she first began having sessions with me, she spoke with the ancestral intelligence by the name of John, who John was an Essene, the people who authored the Dead Sea Scrolls. He was a member of the Jewish people. And he was incarnate around the time period of Jesus. And John speaks in a very scholarly, philosophical tone, and Shirley could follow his thoughts very well. However, when the ancestor called Tom McPherson, who was an Irishman mm-hmm. and who performed on the Shakespearean stage, also began to speak through to her as a guide and as a teacher, she had immediate rapport with mm-hmm. him because she knew him from a past life when she herself had been on the Shakespearean stage.
Uh-huh.
And in this lifetime, she refers to herself not as a movie star, but always as a gypsy, meaning mm-hmm. a person who performs on the stage. There was an immediate rapport between them. There was an immediate familiar sensibility and rapport that they had. And this is why we have diverse guides and teachers from other times and other cultures, because they were there with us when the karma was incurred, when the lessons that we are working on now are still relevant to both our personhood, who we are as people, who we are as individuals, the goals we would like to achieve in life on both the very spiritual and the practical basis. And our spirit ancestors or our spirit guides and teachers help us in that particular direction in our life.
And you also say in some of when spirit is speaking through you in the future healer, you say that there are certain ancestors who are kind of have different roles, like one diva and one friend, that I particularly resonated with those two.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, I think you said that diva was kind of an overseer of the planet.
Yes, what we're looking at now in the context of guides and teachers is that there's a model I offer that in spirit communication that talks about that we have what are called guides and teachers, and they help us go into the areas of, say, healing our emotions. They
okay.
work to heal our emotions and the understanding of our emotions. As an example, fear, if we say I live my life without fear, that's not a good thing because fear is a natural dimension within ourselves. Fear is actually a natural ability to feel concern. And so if we ask our guides, what do we fear? Sometimes the images we conjure up through the subconscious are the 6 o'clock news. Whereas if
That's
we
why
say,
I don't watch the news.
Yes, if we say, what are my concerns? The guides can begin to send us what I call the interconnecting patterns of life in which there's an agenda. There are pre-existing resources and people within our karma and dharma that we can help tune into, tap into, and make progress in our lives with healing our emotions. You then go up to what are called, say, master teachers and ascended masters, and these are the great beings on the planet, like, say, Gandhi or Jesus or Muhammad or Moses, and they work in large soul groups. Finally, then, you start getting into the realm of what are called angels and archangels, and these are souls that have never incarnated, and they work more in the form of, as described in the Book of Enoch. These are the archangels like Lord Michael or Lord Gabriel that we hear about, or they're the great devas or the great avatars that we hear about in Buddhism and Hinduism. These are beings that you might say are energy cousins to humanity, but they work through incarnating or work as forces in nature. They work as angels. They work with large soul groups. And people can have what are called their personal angels. These, again, are just souls that have not incarnated, so therefore they do not have karma, and they fulfill the energy state or consciousness that the word angel means. El is the Hebrew word for God, and anj means messenger. Angel, meaning messenger of God.
And they were here at the very beginning, right?
In esoteric history, they were here in the very beginning of time, space, and consciousness. Well, Einstein isolated that, you know, time and space are one and the same. Metaphysicians such as Newton went one step further and said time, space, and consciousness are all one. So therefore, as time and space evolves and we come to a more comprehensive understanding of it through the laws of physics, essentially consciousness evolves also as we move closer and closer to what we call the higher self, or as we learn about the divine spark that exists inside of each and every one of us. However, there are different evolutionary paths. In esoteric history, there are souls who, according to Edgar Cayce and various other esoterists such as Rudolf Steiner, said some souls entered into what were called the mineral realms, that is, say, crystals. Some souls entered into the realm of the biological dimension of life that we call, say, vegetable, per se, and then some entered into the realm of animal. And eventually we evolved into the state of humanity as it exists today. However, what we call angels, devas, and even at times, as other folks have pointed out, say the fairy kingdoms, such as were worked with in the famous Finhorn Garden, these are souls whose evolutionary path was to remain one with nature rather than necessarily incarnating into the human cycles.
One thing that really surprised me when I read Spirit Communication was the souls that are helping us, or the spirits, the angels, they get as much from us as we get from them. You know, I've been doing this work, the work that I've been doing, I guess for about 15 years, and I have, you know, and it's constantly evolving, but I always felt that they were supporting us, helping us. I never realized that we're helping them in their soul growth as much as they're helping us, and that was a revelation for me.
I believe it's a true statement. And it has a point of refinement to it. If I can just differentiate, for instance, say, between the difference between angels and archangels. Archangels are the great souls like Gabriel and Michael who have been here for our whole evolutionary karma. Angels are souls that have never incarnated into the earth plane before, so they don't have human karma, so therefore they can be messengers of the divine. On the other hand, while angels don't necessarily incarnate, archangels do not necessarily incarnate. Angels can incarnate, and when they do incarnate, they become what are called new souls. And the joke is when people go, well, you know, I've had many incarnations and I'm an old soul, one of the ancestors that speaks through me, Antun Ray, says, well, I wouldn't boast too much about that because all that means is that you're a slow learner. And he often jokes that, you know, he'll say, well, I was in Egypt 3,000 years ago, and here you are 3,000 years later asking the same old question.
Yes, tell us about him.
About Antun Ray in particular.
Yes.
Well, I had mentioned Tom McPherson, who many people are familiar with, you know, from Shirley MacLaine's books. No less a luminary, I suppose, is Antun Ray. Antun Ray is, his name is it's as much a title as it is a name. The term Atun is a term meaning old sun. Ra, it means the inner light or the inner insight of the divine. So essentially it means, one who has the wisdom of the inner divine. Antoun Ray's personal history is that he had been what was called the Pharaoh's Masters of the Chariots, which is sort of the equivalency of what we'd call a general. And he had been involved in some of the unification wars of Egypt. However, he eventually turned away from the issue of warfare towards the path of enlightenment, and he joined what was called the Nubian priesthood. And we see the remnants of the Nubian priesthood in an ancient city called Menreh, which would be in the to the south of Egypt. And they are very ancient people, even older than the Egyptians themselves. Mm-hmm. But eventually, where we can probably recognize his history most personally, was in his incarnation period around what is called the time period of Akhenaten. This was the famous predecessor to Tutankhamun, or as Old King Tut, as the song says.
Mm-hmm.
And Akhenaten was unique in that Antoun Ray identifies him as the pharaoh who was the last ones to honor the memories of Joseph. And Akhenaten and his wife Nefertiti essentially declared monotheism throughout Egypt. And in other words, they declared the enlightenment that all the gods were one.
Right.
And that all the famous 73 names of the Egyptian deities essentially were merely aspects of one divine being, which again, of course, we refer to as universal consciousness. This is reflected in modern mysticism, say, in the Jewish system of the Kabbalah, by the so-called 70-plus names of God, and which are, again, merely aspects describing the different dimensions of one divine being. So Antoun Ray was a vizier. He helped build the city of Akhenaten, which means the horizon of the Aten, meaning the horizon or the rising of wisdom. He worked very closely with Dr. Walter Semkew in helping identify what Dr. Semkew called forensically identifiable past lives. What this means is that Dr. Walter Semkew is a principal researcher in reincarnation, and he wanted to bring scientific standards to the conversation and the dialogue about reincarnation as a phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
So he set a very high bar of setting the forensic standards by which identity can be proven in a court of law. And he developed the theory that if karma is consistent from one lifetime to the next, the physiology of a person, which he's qualified to examine as a medical doctor, should be consistent, which is just a fancy way of saying that we look the same from one lifetime to the next.
Right.
So he worked with Antoun Ray in identifying multiple past lives, and the value of that work with Antoun Ray is here's an example. If people in the audience can conjure up the image of the fellow on the $20 bill, which was Andrew Jackson, and if they can conjure up from the not too far ago elections the image of Senator John Kerry, who ran against then George Bush, they might note the rather remarkable resemblance between the two men. This is because Antoun Ray suggested that Senator John Kerry is the reincarnation of Andrew Jackson.
Huh. I'll have to check that out.
And, well, here's a few interesting points. One, not only from the portraits that we have of Jackson does he look virtually identical to Senator John Kerry. Both men were military men and ran on their military records. Both men were war heroes and had developed unique military tactics for fighting in river deltas when dealing with the complexity of the strategies of warfare they were involved in. But what was even more unique is that Andrew Jackson had been the only man to run against the son of a previous president.
Oh, boy. You know, I can pull their images up in my mind, and I could see it. I could see the resemblance.
Well, for people who would like to look further into the case and a little more about Antoon Ray, they can go to the website johnadams.net. It's just like the president's name, johnadams.net, and they can review all the case histories that Antoon Ray worked on.
What did Antoon Ray tell you what your connection with him was, if he's been working so closely with you?
I had a number of incarnations with Antoon Ray. I apparently was an artist in the city of Akhenaten during one of Antoon Ray's incarnational cycles. And I had worked with Antoon Ray on new systems of symbols, because what was radical about the artwork in that period of time is that it was to develop a system of art that was not based on what's called the anthropomorphic symbols of the gods, but in other words, the gods in human form, but to take symbols that existed in nature associated with the deities and then arrange them into an art form that expressed a sacred ecology.
Hmm.
As an example, you had mentioned. The work called Flower Essences.
Oh, yeah.
We know that sacred oils and aromas, for instance, stimulate powerful memories, okay, when people use them in the course of meditation. We know that aromatherapists can trigger deep physiological responses to people, which can trigger healing effects in people. In the artwork of Armana, it was the idea to take all the things that exist within a sacred ecology and arrange them in the equivalency of their symbolisms so that a sacred language could be developed. Some of this is retained in our contemporary culture in what's called the Song of Songs by Solomon, and
mm-hmm.
is considered one of the most beautiful ways of sort of praising the deity in the form of hymns and or poetry and literature. But the Egyptians were more literal with that. In the temple complex in Karnak in Egypt, I take people to a sacred garden, and in the walls of this garden, of which the word Eden means walled garden, you can go into this garden, and carved onto the walls are a series of botanically recognizable plants that in turn make up all of the principal fruits, vegetables, edible foods, and medicinal foods of the Egyptian apothecary.
Hmm.
And this in this garden, it was laid out in such a way so that the sunlight and the moonlight, as it traveled over it, essentially as the flowers in their bloomed, the aromas alone could trigger different states of consciousness. So it was literally, when you were meditating
wow.
there, like living in Eden.
Goodness, I want to go there. I want to be there. I'm going to do a deep meditation tonight and really try to get there.
That's one of the ways you can travel there, because all the great sacred places are there for the soul to travel to. And while it's wondrous to travel there in our own person, to say in the form of do a pilgrimage or sacred travel or transformational travel, as I call it.
Oh, tell us about transformational travel. Those are your trips.
Well, yes. In a way, I suppose we were discussing it already. The transformational travel is to take people to cultures, whether it's in Egypt or Bali or Machu Picchu, where Shirley MacLaine traveled to have deeply transformative experiences. In this country, people go to Sedona, say the Red Rock country, which was sacred to Native Americans and was considered an area sacred for healing and raising consciousness. And healing didn't necessarily mean that a person had, a cut finger or a sniffle or a stubbed toe. It really meant healing the emotions. The idea that the emotions are a deep part of the chakras, a deep part of the energy.
Mm-hmm.
And if we would go to Egypt, each one of the temples in Egypt, if you were to look at Egypt in a human form, in fact, Egypt, if you look at it on the map, is a big square. And if you were to picture the image of a of a child just at the moment of birth in the womb. And if the Nile River represented the spinal column, there are temples in Egypt that would be at a chakra point.
Mm-hmm.
Out along the spinal column of this soon-to-be-born or newly-born child. So when we go to Egypt and we travel up the Nile, we visit the various temples, and each temple in turn represents a masculine and a feminine dimension of the chakras. For instance, there's the temple of Hathor, who is the goddess of song, joy, and dance. Then there's the temple of Horus, who is the hawk-headed deity that people see. And in a way, Horus represents the divine intellect as we become more conscious of how things flow from the superconscious to the subconscious, where we have dreams, then into our consciousness, which if we remember our dreams and learn from them, that becomes our expansion into the higher self. Well, Horus is the spiritualized intellect. But without the balance of intuition, the not just the left side of the brain, but the right side of the brain, of heart-centered values, of love, as represented by Hathor, the goddess of joy, song, and dance, intellect doesn't have its full balance. So by the time you travel to the different temples in Egypt, or say visit that garden, which is returning to Eden and discovering what I call our original identity, our original nature, that is when we have awakened to beginning to remember who we are.
That's an amazing trip, quite outside the realm of your normal tourist tourist guide.
Well, there's a saying, not the bad mouth tourist, but there's a saying.
Of course, it's just something very specific and something very special. I want to just see if I can there if we have any callers, Seth. If we have any callers, if anybody wanted to ask Kevin a question about channeling, about what his work, what he does. Do you have any callers on there, Seth? Are you? Hi, you're on the air?
Hello.
Hi, who am I speaking with, please?
Hi, Daria, this is Marlene. How are you doing?
Hi, Marlene. I'm good, thank you. You have a question for Kevin?
Yes, I was wondering if he could help me to discover how I would go about finding out who my spirit guide is, who is helping me, because I've tried many, many times and have not been able to connect with my spirit guide.
Well, my recommendation is to use methodologies that are fairly well established and that we can go back to and repeat, because eventually they will help us make the breakthrough that we need to. I would recommend the simple elegance of the book Creative Visualization by Shakti Gwain. And in there's an exercise that she encourages, which is that we assume a comfortable position, which can be seated or laying down. We might acquire some music that's pleasing, usually in 4/4 rhythm. I recommend something like the Pachelbel Canon. And what we do is we begin to creatively visualize a classic exercise where at first we visualize our hands. Then we begin to visualize looking down at our feet. And we try to let the vision flow into what's called a lucid state, to where we begin to notice that we may be wearing some kind of attire. We may look down and we see on our feet that we're wearing sandals. On our hands, we may be wearing certain jewelry or ornamentation. And finally, we may be wearing some kind of garment. The next stage is to create a space in which we are comfortable. I usually recommend allowing the vision of something like a garden-like environment to emerge, because the garden environment was a place that is universal to all cultures throughout time as a place of learning, further deepening meditation and spirituality. The thing that transpires then is that in that space, in that time, in that culture that you find yourself in, your guide and teacher can then approach you in their own personhood and begin to communicate with you. Now, the nice thing about this is that people go, well, every time I try to visualize or meditate, I fall asleep. That can be a good thing. But what you're doing is you're beginning to fall into a more gradually lucid sleep state. And this is why I recommend that people keep a dream journal, because gradually what is occurring is that your visualization, meditation, and your dream state are all becoming one. And as you begin to attune to your guides and teachers, like a vibration, you will gradually begin to start recognizing people in your daily life through a sense of deja vu, as though I have known you before. This is generally people who you've had other incarnations with, probably from the same time and place as your guide and teacher. The most valuable thing that you can gain from your guides and teachers are three things. One, their name, because once you are introduced to a person by name, say such as Marlene, or my name is Kevin, then you can carry on a conversation more comfortably. The second thing is the time period they're from and the area of guidance that they're giving you, because that's where the karma and the life lessons were incurred, as well as your dharma, what your service, what your gifts, what your God-given talents are in this lifetime. And the final stage then is to allow them to give you guidance as to the people, the ideas, and the resources to help fulfill not just your karma, as though you've got a bunch of burdens, but your dharma, which is your source of enlightenment.
Great. And I also want to add, Marlene, that it's a process that could take some time, so don't put time limitations on yourself. Thank you so much for calling in. And thank you, Kevin.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thank you. Before we run out of time, Kevin, I want to get to some of your in the Future Healer, the book you co-authored with Ron Henry. Spirit speaks about how we're aligning with the planet and how we're accelerating the stream of consciousness. So, you have coming changes for humanity for 2012. Could you tell us? I've got about 8 minutes left, and I know everyone's anxious to hear about your predictions for 2012.
Yes, well, there's a process I refer to as the World of 2012, and it's the idea that people are looking at the World of 2012 many times through, the filter of a dramatic disaster movie.
I know, it's terrible.
Or at times through the cautionary elements of the predictions of Edgar Cayce. But what the World of 2012 is really all about is more the way Buckminster Fuller said it, to create perspective. Buckminster Fuller said, it's exciting to live into the 21st century, because when we arrive there, it's not so much that we will be living in utopia as we'll have all the resources to begin to build it.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he was speaking as an engineer. If people can remember what was called the harmonic convergence,
yes.
This occurred in 1987, and the harmonic convergence, interestingly, occurred as a phenomenology from a book called the Mayan Factor by Jose Arguelles. And it was simply the idea that if people go to sacred places like Stonehenge, Egypt, Serpent Mound in this country, in my native Ohio, or Sedona, or right in their own backyard, and if they pray or if they meditate for peace, essentially at that time, it was between August 16th and 17th. At that moment, the portals of time, space, and consciousness were so wide open that if people went to these sacred places and asked for healing for the planet, it would be a time in which the veil between worlds would be very thin. And
mm-hmm.
if you will, the angels and the devas and the deity could hear those prayers, and it was like a vote for peace. Well, 3.5 years later, the Berlin Wall came down, the Soviet Union as a military institution imploded, and people may recall what they felt like at that time. It was almost as though that the world had been transformed literally in the twinkling of an eye, just as Edgar Cayce had predicted. And I think we've turned a corner. That although now, although it used to be Edgar Cayce, Shirley MacLaine, and me and a few other people who are going like, well, lifestyle leads to consequences, in California may eventually be submerged in the ocean if, you know, if technology and society continues in a certain direction. I guess the good news is that it wasn't Shirley that won the Oscar. It was Al Gore with his Inconvenient Truth.
Right.
And eventually won the Nobel Peace Prize, when maybe it should have been Edgar Casey. But the point is that what 2012 is, it's a new harmonic convergence. But the original harmonic convergence was so powerful that it continues, that if in the East the false pride was their military institutions, which collapsed and were transformed overnight, and then out of that emerged, say, the European Union. What is going on in the West at this time is that the transformation, the collapse and the transformation of, say, financial institutions is continuing. That as we approach 2012 as a new harmonic convergence, there will be great potential. And some of that potential may look like this. Through the Internet, we can now have universal education. Through the Internet, eventually there will emerge, through universal information, universal communication, it is like a new Akashic Records, a new collective unconscious. There will emerge new types of a holistic type of commerce that will create a universal middle class, and so therefore a capacity for universal democracy. Not so much a one world government, but more of a universal state of consciousness. In a way, the Internet is like the way that the crystals were used back in Atlantis when they were used properly, which was to amplify consciousness and to amplify the collective consciousness and the unity of consciousness we have. Medicine will become holistic, and it will be fundamentally based on nutrition, so therefore more universal and indigenous agriculture, indigenous to the region that people live in, but still with a global exchange of resources, will develop a new type of agriculture that will be an Eden-based agriculture, where nutrition and ending hunger in the world will become the primary goal of nations rather than necessarily warfare. And new ecologies will be discovered in the rainforest that will contain new herbs, new medicines, and even evolution in the human physiology, to where the physiology will be able to attain what some rare people are able to do, which is for humans to be able to synthesize vitamin B and vitamin C and or assimilate it from completely vegan sources. In other words, a great deal of the people in the West who make up only, say, 5% of the world's population, but use 95% of the world's resources.
Talk about being out of balance.
Yes. They are going to begin to join what is called the majority of the world. The majority of the world actually already believes in reincarnation. The 800 million people in India already believe in reincarnation and practice vegetarianism. Close to a billion Buddhists practice meditation and practice consciousness. So the West, through its sciences, are going to be able to make these things practicable forms of knowledge rather than necessarily, say, religious belief systems. They're going to restore them as being conscious dimensions of ourselves through the Western scientific method. In other words, a merger of science, consciousness, and spirituality will become one. What we call the global economy will cease to be commerce so much as it will be exchanges of resources according to people's needs. We're beginning to see these things, for instance, say, in fair trade. Fair trade practices, living wage.
Right.
And what are emerging are what I call the good guy corporations. The bad guy corporations do these things only for profit. And we have seen the consequences of that already, say, in things like the pollution that occurred in the Gulf. The good guy corporations are going evolution of consciousness, and I suppose that if your listeners could con- conjure up going into, say, an old supermarket along the lines of the say Safeway, and going to the meat department. Whereas now, if they go to, say, the institution called Whole Foods,
mm-hmm.
they are making sustainable contact with local
right.
farmers. They are promoting
yeah.
Organic agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And the crisis
right.
is
right.
not a crisis of will on the part of the farmers to grow organics, or it isn't that the commercial forces aren't there. The crisis is only 1% of the soil in this country is certifiable as organic. The good news is that the larger bulk of nutritional resources can come from indigenous soil, or what is called pre-Columbian soil, and those are beginning to be harvestable also. So you can see
so
how all these
this is all good news. This
yes.
really is all good news. I hear my music, so we're just about ready to close. So
one always hears angels with good news.
Thank you so much, Kevin. Kevin's website, kevinryerson.com. His website is a journey. There are articles, spirited comments. Please visit his website. You can see what's coming up for him in September and October. And I want to end with a quote from Kevin that says, "With passion and practice, you can accomplish anything." My guest next week is John C. Davis, a speaker, teacher, and healer who has a very unique story. You can read about him at my website. So once again, Kevin, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me on the program today.
You're welcome. Thank you all. I wish you grace and peace always. Good night.